This is F1 Debrief. Longer is better and pointy is good. Coming up this week, we talk about goodbye videos, terrible lighting, spy photography, digital subscriptions, tweeting, fantasy racing, and British accents.
Am I right in guessing that this week we're all about the launches?
It's been a busy week.
Has anything else happened apart from that?
I don't think so.
If you're not into launches, you may just want to switch off now. I'll tell you, that's what it's going to be. Wall to wall, new stuff.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Toyota as they have gone out on a high, sort of. They produced an amazing farewell video. They've set up a special website, which we'll link to in the show notes, and the video is available to watch online or download. It features a few songs and the highs and lows of their time in the sport. No Frank, though.
It was described in the comments as the best thing that Toyota have ever done.
Yeah.
That's how good the video is. Doesn't say much about the team.
It's been a bad week for the F1 calendar as Abu Dhabi want the last race of the season forever.
Greedy.
They had a bit of a battle with Brazil for the 2010 slot, but won out, presumably not based on any of the action from the 2009 race. Richard Cregan said, "We were in the championship for this year and happy with that. To have the last race means we can maximise the whole effort made here to deliver a magnificent venue. I think now at the end of the season, people will come here, will take a few days holiday and enjoy the benefit of the area."
So that's why they really want it to be the last race of the season, so that all the F1 teams chill out there and spend lots and lots of money when the season is over.
It's been a good week for USF1 as they finally confirmed a driver. As rumoured for several months, it's Jose Maria Lopez. He was linked with the team ages ago but needed to bring the required funding, and now he's found that, he's been announced. It was weird that he was announced by the president of Argentina and then confirmed by USF1, but either way, he's on the grid for 2010.
I think if I had a new team and it was my first season in Formula 1, I'd want to announce my first driver. That is very, very odd. I hope the guy is bringing an awful lot of money to the team.
It's been a bad week for Kimi Raikkonen as he took part in his first official rally, although it wasn't part of the WRC. And on his first day, he walloped a tree. Neither he nor his co-driver were hurt, and the car was fixed up to allow him to continue for the entire two-day event. But he didn't do particularly well, finishing in 58th position.
Speaking about his crash, Kimi said he misheard the engine note. Now, I have no idea why that might cause a crash, and I think it shows exactly why we aren't covering rally. I don't know what that means.
No. Are we going to cover any of the other rallies?
I hope so.
I can't believe we've never covered any other ex-F1 drivers in such detail before.
No, but I do like rally. It's very picturesque. And I quite enjoy following it. I don't know if we're going to follow it all year, but we did show a bit of interest in Kimi's first outing since he left F1. Maybe we'll do more of that this year.
News and views.
Like you said at the beginning, it's all about launches this week, and we started off with Mercedes on Monday, but that was just a livery launch. There was no new car.
You say that was just a livery launch. They may or may not have been the only team just to provide us with a livery launch, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Firstly, just a few things to say about Mercedes. How bad was the lighting inside that Mercedes Museum,
well,
where they held the launch?
It was good. They had a big launch and they offered a live stream and we all got to watch it, although it kept dying. But apart from that, it was good. We all had access, and they're launching a brand new livery, nice new colours. Couldn't actually see the car for the lighting.
No, there was absolutely no interest in the chassis because we knew it was it was last year's Braun chassis, so we weren't even remotely interested in what that looked like. We just wanted to know what colour it was, and for the life of us, nobody was quite sure. For a good half an hour after the car had been officially revealed, literally nobody was any the wiser as to what colour it was supposed to be.
We couldn't figure it out until there were some more close-up shots. And when we did get those, it's just a bit grey, isn't it, really?
It's a grey featuring a bit of a different grey, I think. It's grey and a bit turquoise. It's kind of reflective, a little bit similar to the McLaren. I can see us getting those confused on track this year. It has some Petronas green in it because obviously they're paying a bit more money than they were for BMW, because BMW never gave them any of their colour. It was always blue and white. And I'm not impressed, really. It's not a nice looking car.
Schumacher and Rosberg were there to unveil the colours, and there was no third driver announcement, so they haven't sorted that out yet.
We were expecting Nick to be announced, but as yet, nothing.
Nothing for Heidfeld yet.
They are testerless. Although maybe it could still easily fall to Anthony Davidson, who was Braun's test driver previously. He may continue in that role, or they may be looking for somebody else. We were literally, generally, the expectation and the big rumour was on Nick, and that hasn't happened as yet.
As the first launch of the season, what would you give it marks out of 10?
Good question. Dodgy lighting, Dickie live stream.
Although there was a live stream, so that is a bonus.
That's a bonus. But no car, no chassis. No. We're just looking at the livery, and I didn't like the livery either. Therefore, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10 to Mercedes.
That is quite generous. I was going to give it a 3.
Blimey.
Because Schumacher was there as well.
Oh, it should have lost points for employing Schumacher.
Moving on to the Ferrari launch then. That was on Thursday. They also had a live stream, and it also died quite a lot.
Pathetic. You say it died quite a lot. I don't recall it living.
Oh.
It was dead from the moment they started, I believe. I barely saw more than 5 seconds of that Ferrari launch. It was hopeless.
They clearly underestimated the demand for the stream. But they did have a new car. So it was our first glimpse at an actual 2010 car.
It's the new shape.
The
chassis shape for 2010 is a retro Red Bull 2009 RB5. That's what we're looking at. We've taken 2 steps back in Formula One. All of this year's cars are going to look just like the best car from last year.
Yeah, it's longer, isn't it? It has a longer
really long, very
and
long.
A very pointy nose. That's the kind of standout thing.
It also has the RB5 dip in the nose, which we saw Adrian Newey develop and introduce last year. Has a new diffuser and notably was covered up. Very, very protective of that diffuser. Last year, Ferrari normally are when it comes to these things, but last year some shots of it did manage to leak out to the internet. This year, no such luck. The car was meant to run just after the launch. It was meant to go out on track. Massa was going to take to the wheel, but the track was too icy and therefore we've still not seen any shots of the rear end of that Ferrari. Nothing to be seen, all covered up, all very hush-hush.
Alonso and Massa were at the launch and they were showing off the new overalls because they're red and white.
A lot more white in the livery, in the overall look of Ferrari this year because of
Santander.
And they must be putting loads of money into that team.
Yeah.
They are paying a lot of money for Alonso.
It's not an easy task to get Ferrari to shift away from red, is it?
No. And you've got a big white rear wing and a lot of white on the front wing. I do like it, actually. It does appeal to me. I think I prefer it to last year. The red was just a bit too much in your face.
I think there were some comments saying that some of the pictures of Alonso and Massa, the white around the legs makes them look like they're really short and have stumpy legs. So that's not good. But they're in the car, it probably won't matter too much.
You're not going to be able to see it. Unless we have clear cars. Maybe they might be...
might be the next
step. That would work, actually.
Yeah.
Seeing the car, the drivers are coloured correctly. They've got the overalls on. They've got the branding all the way down to their shoes. Maybe we should have see-through cockpits.
Cars. I would give that launch 6 out of 10 because they had a new car. They had a little bit of a change to the livery, which was interesting, but they couldn't run it on track. Although it's good that they wanted to, or we assume they actually wanted to give it a run.
That's true. I will not give them as much credit as you've given them, and I will give them 4 out of 10 again. For this reason and this reason alone, their live stream died, and they claimed that the reason it died is they were so popular and so many people were so interested in the launch that they couldn't possibly ever conceivably handle 3 million people tuning in. And I don't believe it. I believe that many people were just trying to hit refresh, refresh, refresh to try and get the damn live stream working. I don't believe 3 million people were really tuning in. And even if they were, I think they should be able to cope with that and not overpromise and underdeliver. And therefore, I'm not going to give them much more credit because I didn't see any of the launch due to their own inadequate technology.
Williams aren't having an actual launch this year, are they?
That's what they've claimed. They're not going to do a proper launch. They're going to save money and they're not really that interested.
No, but we did see a picture of the new car this week.
Some spy shots.
Leaked out. And again, it's quite pointy.
Yes, I would say they were deliberately leaked. I don't think this isn't some kind of undercover agent. This is a stage managed, what would you call it, lo-fi launch.
It's probably
the best way of describing it.
They're not that mad about it.
No, I'm sure they sent the photographer along and I'm sure they told Autosport to stand in the right place and to point the camera at the car and then to publish it. I'm assuming that's the way it worked. They've put out a viral, quote-unquote, video, which is a behind-the-scenes or an undercover look at the car, which was obviously completely made up by the team and completely sanctioned by the team.
Rosberg, I've lost my helmet in Monaco.
It's I'm sure the same company behind it somewhere along the way. It's a bit like the McLaren videos we didn't like from last year, which were the viral things with Lewis being was he a taxi driver and he was pretending to drive his car with a mobile phone. It's along those lines. It's an interesting way to launch a car. It's unique. It's original. I don't think a team have done it before.
You're not fooling anyone.
It's just don't pretend, really. We know it's official, and that's good. I don't mind it. The car is pointy. It seems to be the trend this year. It looks very long. It could do with one or two more sponsors.
So as a non-existent launch, really, you can give that 0 out of 10.
No, I'm going to give that 6 because... it's different, isn't it? They're going out on a limb. They're trying something.
But if you're not going to launch, then at least don't launch. Don't pretend.
Well, there is that, I suppose. But at some point, the car's going to come out. At some point, you're going to wheel the car out and people are going to want to take pictures of it. So why not go to your favoured news outlet and give them a bit of an exclusive and say, well, look, it's not really a launch, but you'll get some traffic from this. So why don't you put it up?
What's wrong with just doing an internet launch, an online only launch? Release some pictures, release your press release all at the same time. And you save money, you don't have to do a real thing, and you don't have to pretend that some spy shots leaked out.
Okay. Is that why it's getting naught?
I'm giving it naught. The McLaren launch really did get a lot more attention than the others, but I think that's because they invited bloggers.
This is the big one. A lot of credit has to go to McLaren for this. It's the launch, I think, of the year. It's the one that's going to stand out the most. They had a live stream. And it worked.
It worked.
It was absolutely flawless, although they haven't released any numbers of how many people were tuning in. All credit to them for inviting journalists and bloggers. That's a nice step forward for McLaren, and it's good to see them doing that. And I thought it went very well.
There was a slight hiccup because they did release the press kit a little bit too soon.
Oops.
And I think Dank leaked all the pictures on Twitter about half an hour before the actual launch.
That was slightly unfortunate, as all the people at the launch hadn't seen the car yet. No. Anybody who wasn't there was already familiar with what was going to be released. And when the covers did come off, it was a little bit of an anticlimax, wouldn't you say?
It was, but it was still, I think it was still exciting, and I'm sure it was still worth being there.
It was a small mistake.
Yeah. Hamilton and Button pulled the covers off the car. And there's a lot of talk about how they were getting on.
In terms of teammates?
Yeah.
What's been being said?
Well, basically, Hamilton looked a bit uncomfortable, and that's a fact. He didn't seem his usual chirpy self, but there was an instant outpouring of concern that they'd be squabbling teammates again, or not them again, but there would be squabbling teammates at McLaren again.
Right.
I think the general consensus is that Button came across really well, but Hamilton was uncomfortable in front of the press, not necessarily because of Button. What do you think?
Do you know what? I'm not entirely sure that I saw the uncomfortability. Is that a word?
That's not a word. That's not a word. I like it.
We'll go with you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Lewis's uncomfortability being on
keep
stage.
Keep using it. The guy, it'll catch on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm starting a new trend. The guy was on stage. He was obviously in the spotlight. He was alongside the current world champion who people are arguably most interested in. He's the guy who's making the big jump from the winning team to the new challenge. And I think, if anything, Lewis came across very well in the way that he argued. The media, the guys from the media were trying to create a controversy, and Lewis was correcting them, which I've not seen him do before. And I like that. And I think there should be more of that. If someone from the media asks you a leading question, which you know is not correct,
don't be drawn on it.
No, absolutely. Make sure that you set them straight first, which Lewis did. Now, a couple of things. He claimed that Lewis got the new parts for the 2009 car ahead of Heikki. He only got them once during the season, and we know for a fact just from watching that that wasn't the case, and Heikki drew the short straw many, many times. So at one point I would say that maybe Lewis was incorrect in suggesting that they were equal teammates throughout the year. But apart from that, I genuinely think that Lewis came across just as well as Jensen, and they both handled it very well.
Stuart Codling blogged about it, and his was basically, I'm not going to talk about this subject because there's really nothing to talk about. People are covering it well enough themselves. And I thought it was good because he linked to a post that Lukey wrote alongside James Allen and Joe Seward.
Well, there you go.
That's good company to keep, isn't it?
Goodness me. Lukey's up there.
Yeah.
And what did Lukey and James and Joe have to say on the matter?
Well, Lukey definitely thought something was up. I think Joe didn't really give his own thought on it, but was just pointing out that some of the readers had picked up on something. And James Allen, well, his headline says McLaren drivers loved up ahead of competitive season.
I wouldn't. That's gone a bit far.
I think he took the opposite view on that.
Mind you, James Allen was there, so maybe he saw something that we didn't.
He could have.
What we should do is make a note of those three blog entries and come back to them at the end of the season, because that's a pretty good wide range of views.
Yeah, it's one of each,
the situation.
Really.
Yeah. So let's take a note of those and then return to them at the end of the season when we're older and wiser and we know exactly how the teammates got on. And see who was the more accurate of the three. And if Lukey comes up on top of
that'd be brilliant.
Joe and James, that will be quite something.
Now, as mentioned, they did invite bloggers into the factory for the launch. It's not a factory, really, is it? Vodafone headquarters.
It's where they do, I guess, the telesales and the support, etc. It's where you send your phone back when you've had enough of them and you want to return your contract. I know that much.
Yeah.
Because that's where I sent my phone when I'd had enough of them.
And we had a voicemail from AD of F1 Tailpipe, who was there.
Hey, good afternoon, Side Podcast gang. It's AD here. I just thought I'd give you a quick ring, leave a quick voicemail with some thoughts on the McLaren launch today. I spent most of the morning actually pinching myself that they let me go, because even though we're all bloggers and everything, I think we're all fans first before anything else. So what a day. That was amazing. It was like being a proper journalist, really, if you could call it that. But very slick operation, and the new car is absolutely stunning when you look at it close up. I mean, I don't really know what the pictures will come out like, either from my camera or what they're like online, because I haven't had a chance to have a look at them yet. But the intricacies and the detail of the car, it really is something very, very nice. If it's anywhere near as fast as it looks, McLaren are going to have a brilliant season. And it's quite interesting to see all of the team really, really relaxed and really buoyant sort of during and after the launch. And they've clearly got high hopes for the season. We wouldn't comment on actually winning the championship yet, sort of really in fear of jinxing the season already. But I think they're pretty confident, and both Lewis and Jensen seem very, very relaxed and are clearly hoping for big things from the car this year. It's quite interesting to see the dynamic between the two of them, actually, when they're on stage in the question and answer session. I thought Lewis looked a little bit uncomfortable, in all honesty, whether or not that's because Jensen's coming to the team as world champion and has stolen some of, call it his limelight or some of the focus away from him, because McLaren have been very, very forwards in making Jensen feel welcome to the team. But it was interesting. So I'm going to go away now and write up everything for the blog. I'm going to not do a shameless plug, as I would usually do there. But I hope you both are right. And as you like to say, see you in the comments.
He stole your line.
He did. That's naughty.
Who sends us a voicemail about their awesome day, tells us that they're going to update their blog, and then forgets to plug it, or deliberately doesn't plug it?
What is that about? We like the shameless plugs.
Come
F1
on.
Tailpipe, and of course we'll link to it in the show notes. But he obviously picked up on the Hamilton being uncomfortable thing as well.
That's another view. It's something to watch this year.
Mm.
Gotta be. Of note, other things that AD just mentioned there, it's very nice that bloggers have the opportunity to have a go at being proper journalists. And we really don't, we don't give McLaren enough credit for some of the things they do behind the scenes. And this is one of those times when they've extended the hand. And they've said, well, look, we know what you're trying to do. We know there are people out there who are interested in becoming part of the Formula One circus. So let's give them a chance to have a go and see how they stack up. And by all means, take a look at Ada's blog and judge him as a proper F1 journalist, because he had the opportunity, and I'm sure he will. He would love the feedback.
So, points out of 10 for this launch. I'm going to give it a full 8.
Blimey! What you're on a roller coaster of rating here, aren't you?
Up and down.
Goodness me! Why? Go on then. Tell me why you're going to give it an 8.
Well, I just think it was really good. Bloggers were there. Lots of pictures. They had the stream that worked. And they didn't underestimate their fans. And I think it was good. They had the new car. The livery didn't change that much, but generally speaking, it had all the elements of a launch that you'd want.
You know what? I don't like the look of the chassis. It's got really, really tiny side pods. And I know that means they're really efficient in terms of their cooling, and that means they're going to go really quickly, but I'm not fond of it. It's a little bit too silver, I just feel like they've had that livery for a long time, and I was hoping for something a bit different, and they didn't deliver. However, in terms of the launch, I think I'll give them a 6, because everything basically went off without a hitch. There were no complaints. Nobody who turned up there appeared to have anything bad to say about the team. We saw it all in all its glory. It was a great way to follow the launch, sitting at home in your armchair. No complaints around. I'll give them a 6.
And now we move on to today, which is Sunday at the time of recording. We've had two launches in one day.
Whose crackpot idea was it to have two Formula One launches in the same day?
Not impressed.
I am exhausted. How about you?
Yeah, pretty much. Sauber and Renault both unveiled their new cars today. Sauber were first. And the first thing I want to say is, you know, they're keeping the name BMW Sauber.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that Ferrari are very impressed with that.
It's not working out well, this whole naming thing, is it?
No.
It's a bit of a mess up from beginning to end. We understand why, because there needs to be a unanimous agreement, and you can't keep changing your name year after year because the FIA thinks it reflects badly on the sport if you don't have consistency. And so they're limited by what they can do, and they don't want to change their name until they've got a major sponsor. And so they're hanging on. They're stuck with what they've got, and they've got a manufacturer who are no longer in the sport, running a car with a competitor's engine.
BMW Sauber powered by Ferrari.
Wonderful. Yeah. What did you make of the car?
Well, it wasn't exactly a stunning launch, was it? They rolled out the car onto the track and that was it. And it didn't have any livery. And it was, the most important bits were black, so you couldn't really see them anyway. It was quite hard to tell what was going on.
It's launching a car at a racetrack is never a good idea.
Not in that way.
Well, not in any way, really.
If it's just going to suddenly appear and you're not really making a big deal out of it, that's one way of launching.
Well, the problem is all of the shots, all of the staged photographs have got whatever happens to be in the background at the time.
And that tends to be, things like that.
Exactly. Just where the car happens to stop. It's not a good look. I mean, Valencia isn't the best looking racetrack in the world. It's a little bit run down, it's a little bit tardy, and that reflects badly on the car. I thought that the studio shots of the Sauber C29 made it look really, really nice. It is lit properly, the colours come out well. I just thought
there aren't really any colours, it's mostly white, isn't it?
Well, it's white and grey, but it looks nice. I guess you could argue that on track is where it's going to be seen, and therefore it needs to look nice on track too, and I don't think it really worked so well out there. I would want a more managed launch than that Sauber gave us. However, I will say hats off to them for organising a launch in the afternoon so that we didn't have to get up early, as we did with the previous three.
They also have covered up their diffuser though, haven't they?
It's a growing trend.
Mm.
And they have a very long car with a very pointy nose.
Oh, that's again, a growing trend as well.
It is. This is the way 2010 is going to look. Very, very... I don't know what people have found in the wind tunnels and why this couldn't be introduced midway through maybe last year. However, since they've all gone away, they've all come to the same conclusion that longer is better and pointy is good.
Which is weird because I just remember in my head that one year Ferrari had a longer car than everyone else and they really, really struggled, particularly around street circuits like Monaco.
Oh, I'll tell you something, the turning circle around Casino in Monaco, that's not going to be good, is it? It's going to be a three-point turn.
Hmm.
How on earth are you going to get those long cars around there? There must be a reason for this. We've got more street circuits than we had before. We've now got Valencia, Singapore, Monaco, Albert Park. Is there any more? Is that all of them? Four street circuits. And a long car is not going to, well, you'd imagine wouldn't work so well on those circuits. However, you have to assume that the larger fuel tank is required them to essentially move everything outwards.
And I suppose if they all have to do it, then it at least evens things up a bit.
I guess it does. I would love somebody to go in a different direction and to find, you know, that they do well in very narrow, twisty tracks, but then don't do so well on the sweeping circuits. I suppose you'd assume that there are more aero circuits, there are more circuits with long sweeping corners, and therefore if you have to go one way or the other, longer is better.
I can't imagine that this launch is going to score particularly highly. Guess what I'm going to give it.
What did you do last time? You gave it a 6 last time?
McLaren got an 8.
Got an 8. Oh, a 1 probably, knowing you.
2 I'm going to go with. 2 out of 10.
Go on. Why?
Well, the car was quite boring and the track didn't look so great, and yeah.
Yeah, and there was no live streaming.
No,
it was weird, wasn't it? After having 3 live streamed launches,
I felt a bit left out.
We did. We had no idea what was going on, and we were relying on journalists for the first photographs. I am going to give it slightly more than you have. I'm going to give it a 4. I felt the backdrop was lacking, but I'll tell you what made it for me is the BMW media site where we get all our pictures and press releases and all the official information from worked very, very well.
Ah, good.
McLaren's was shot to pieces.
Yeah.
Ferrari's was shot to pieces. Mercedes was okay. No, Mercedes was impossible.
And
it was
just
really
wait until
down.
We talk about Renaults.
We haven't got to Renaults yet, but Sauber's website, maybe it was down to the... Maybe they weren't so popular. Maybe they just have better infrastructure. I don't know. But in terms of getting hold of the photographs and the material and the press kit and everything that we needed, Sauber did a bang up job on that front, and all credit to them. So let's give them a 4.
We didn't have long to come to terms with the Sauber launch, because then it was straight onto the Renault event. Well, I say event, it was the same kind of thing, really.
Well, yes, it was exactly the same, although it was marginally worse.
Is that possible?
Oh, we'll get to it in a minute, but let's start at the beginning. The car came out and it was a different colour. The Sauber was marginally different, but it wasn't a huge departure from what we've seen before.
And we don't think that's the finished thing anyway.
It was lacking in sponsors. Renault, a huge change.
They have gone back to the yellow and black of whatever years that they used to run yellow and black. But they have red in there as well, because they've got the Total sponsorship. Now, everyone in the comments was like, yay, it's yellow and black. This is so gorgeous. It's so wonderful. Look how lovely it is. Can they not see the red? I don't understand. It looks horrible.
I'm guessing you're not liking the Total?
It looks horrible. It's red.
So it's red on the side plates of the front wing, and red on the side plates and the end plates of the rear wing the Total sponsor.
I think James did a little bit of photoshopping and made the red black, so how it would look if it was done properly. And that did look better, and I will grant you that. But there's no point saying, if you just ignore the red, it looks really lovely. Because you might as well say, if you just ignore the rear wings, they're not fugly.
Right. But I am in the camp of the people who are saying, just ignore the red. But I'll tell you why. Was it last year or the year before? Ollie from Blog F1 did a fine post on Renault liveries. And he dug up the Bumblebee look from years gone by. Days of yore. And since then, we've been championing and arguing and pleading for Renault to go back to that look, because it looked gorgeous. And I think they put out a modern car decorated in yellow and black, and it did look really good. And finally, I think Renault have listened to the fans, and they've done...
Or they haven't got any other sponsors.
Well, possibly. You could argue that, but I think there is a certain... I mean, they could have picked any colour scheme from days of yore. But they didn't. They picked the one that everybody was crying out for, and that's what they've done now. And the only sponsor they do have is Total, and that's the only one that ruins it. So it's not their fault. I'm arguing for ignore the red. Well, it could be worse. Look at last year's livery.
Yeah, but the red wasn't so hideous when it was matched with white and blue and yellow and orange, because it was just a hideous mess anyway. If you're trying to make a pretty thing and then you ruin it with splashes of red. I mean, it has a red... rear wing, which is, you could sort of ignore that if you just chop that out of the pictures. But then it's got two red wing mirrors, which just stick up in the middle of the car. It looks ridiculous. I'm sorry, you're all wrong. Yellow and black is not good.
You're not a fan. I'm a fan. Sorry. I do like it. I think that the overalls may not work so well in yellow and black.
They do look like bumblebees.
They do. It's the bumblebee team, isn't it? No question about it. The drivers are going to be buzzing around the track, and you can see the headlines unfolding now.
I think RG already claimed in the comments when they win or whatever that they've put a sting into the competition or whatever. He's already claimed that one.
It's going to happen. Joe will have a field day, I'm sure. What other things to point out from the launch? They were very inconspicuous with their announcements, and I think...
They didn't announce anything. We were expecting Vitaly Petrov, is that how you say it? He is their second driver, and we were expecting him to be confirmed, but he wasn't. He just turned up there and unveiled the car.
Yes.
So we assume that he is their driver.
He dressed up in Renault clothing, and then he pulled back the covers with his new teammate, Robert Kubica. Well, no, it's been announced now, but it took an awful long time for it to be announced. And also the test drivers who are part of the Renault Driving Academy, which is Hopingtong and Jerome D'Ambrosio.
Yes.
Did I get those right?
I think so.
New names. Terrible business. Those drivers, they're associated with Genie Capital. And we talked about this in a previous show, and we thought that Eric May...
He manages them, doesn't he?
He's part of... Yeah, they come under his... driver management.
It was good
department.
When they showed up in the morning, because they both walked in together. Oh. And you're like, that's not conspicuous at all.
No.
These two drivers that are going to be driving together.
We criticised McLaren for leaking documents to the media a little bit early, but...
Can you not get your drivers to arrive separately, please?
Or maybe undercover or something. But don't just wander. They may as well have been walking hand in hand up the... Oh, goodness me. It's just a disaster. And from that, from a media management point of view, Renault really sort of lost the plot.
Well, yeah. I mean, talking of media, the website, they... shut it down, basically, and it comes up. Both the fan site and the media site came up with a coming soon. We're redesigning this. It's going to launch when we launch. And nothing happened all day. I don't know if it's going to. They seem to have broken it.
It died. The media, the pictures, I think we're still now waiting for media pictures to download. At one point, one JPEG photograph of the new livery, it said download time 1 hour 15 minutes.
We could have
gone to the track and come back with a photograph quicker than it would have taken to download. It was a disaster. The fan blog, you're right, has gone completely at the moment. It's offline. And
they did do that last year, though, I think. So they redesigned it, didn't they?
That's true. And also, we haven't mentioned, but isn't the original RF1PP coming back?
Yes.
Apparently.
Good news.
Yes. Mr. Bradley Lord, his name nearly
Lord
escaped
Bradley.
Me. Yeah, Lord Bradley. The name nearly escaped me then. He scarpered off to F1 racing a few years ago when I think he probably had enough of Flavio.
Yeah.
And he needed a break from that. And now he's agreed to come back to the Renault team now that they are Flavio-less. I reckon he's probably took one look at Eric and thought, hey, I'd like to work for him.
Everyone likes him as much as you do.
Exactly. Who wouldn't want to go and work for Eric in the new Bumblebee team? RF1PP is coming back, and that
the original and the best.
Yes, I'm not quite sure what happens to the existing blog guy, because I like him too. He's a nice chap too. And it would be a shame that if he got pushed out, or maybe they work side by side. I don't know. Maybe we can expect really good things from Renault. Maybe it can only get better and better, but they've reverted in the meantime.
Really get worse than that this moment when it's not doing anything. So
it's missing. It's Facebook only. But they do have a Flickr site, which is lovely, where the pictures were also posted when their entire website collapsed under the weight of its own success and ineptitude.
So, points out of 10.
One thing we haven't mentioned, which we have to mention, and I sort of alluded to at the very beginning, is this was supposed to be the great unveiling of the R30, the challenger for 2010, and as far as most people could tell from looking at it, it wasn't the whole of this year's car. It wasn't the whole deal. You're looking at
bits and pieces.
Yeah, you're looking at a bit of a mishmash of what's gone into last year's car and repainted. Therefore, I'm not too sure. I think the wool was being pulled over our eyes a little bit, and we weren't really seeing the big picture.
I guess they were hoping that the livery would distract you, and I think it does, those red bits.
To be honest with you, I don't think they were thinking that. I think they just I don't think they were ready. I think that possibly they were slightly over ambitious and they haven't got the parts ready for what they need. And the car may even test this week with the wrong parts.
Wasn't it missing some steering or something?
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. That's right. They couldn't get it in or out of the parking bay in order to take photographs of it because it has no steering arms. It's just not finished. It's not. They're really, really on the back foot in terms of development, and that's not good because we don't even know what we're looking at.
They've had a tough off season, though.
It's been a bad
one. It's no excuse. But yeah, you can sort of understand.
They didn't announce their second driver. They didn't announce properly their reserve drivers, and they forgot to put the steering arms on the car. So, what do you give it?
I'm going to give it, I think, 2 out of 10, because the launch was terrible, but I do like that it was a new livery, which is exciting, even if it was awful. But it's good for a team to be completely different, whereas all the others look exactly the same.
I am wondering where all the sponsorship has gone. That has to be questioned, because apart from Santander at Ferrari and Petronas at Mercedes, we really haven't got any big sponsorship changes this year. The Renault livery was looking a bit sparse. The Sauber livery was looking very sparse. They didn't have a single big sponsor.
Williams was looking very blank.
So it's not looking good for sponsorship this year. It's definitely affected the launches because budgets have had to be cut back, and we're suffering as fans. We're suffering. It almost makes me want to wish for the single car launch.
So
that's how bad it is.
Marks out of 10 then.
I love Renault, but that's a 4.
That's all the launches we've seen so far. I've made a note of all our scores, so when they've all done their launches, we can compare and contrast. Next week we have Toro Rosso, I think, are launching on Monday, although I don't know if it's a real launch or if the car's just going to appear because they're testing. I'm not sure how that's going to work. And Mercedes are supposedly launching their car as opposed to just the colour scheme as well. And on Wednesday, Virgin are going to launch.
Okay, I think all of the remaining teams are going to struggle to beat your 8,
yes,
which you gave to McLaren.
McLaren have set a high benchmark.
I'm going to be amazed if they manage to beat that.
It looks like they're all launching at circuits now, so it's going to going to be tricky.
True. I am. Oh, no, the Virgin one's going to be online.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The Lotus one is in London, I think. Mm. But so, you know, they may come up with the goods. I'm particularly interested in the Toro Rosso because this is the first chassis they've had to design by themselves since they were Minardi. So they're no
Given
longer...
Given that everyone else is turning into Red Bulls, though, I imagine it's going to look pretty similar.
That's true. They could probably just survive on last year's... Well, they're not allowed to, I suppose, but they could, in theory, survive on last year's car because it was good enough. At the end of the season, it was good enough to start this year. Maybe they'll build on that. So that's something to be looking forward to. And we'll cover the other launches as and when they happen.
There's plenty of chatter on sidepodcast.com, but things get even more creative on our wiki. There's a book group, a custom dictionary, sidepodcast diaries, and a place to share your own circuit designs. There's information about the shows, and you can register your interest in appearing on an upcoming podcast. Visit wiki.sidepodcast.com, sign up for a free account, and get involved. For the past 2 weeks, we've been pretty scathing about Autosport, haven't we?
I hadn't noticed. Was it the Castrol rankings? Was it the survey? Or was it the trade show?
All of the above. Hmm. But this week we have good news.
Go on. Yay. What have they done well this week?
They have announced that the magazine is going digital.
Hallelujah.
It will still be in physical form for anyone who's panicking about that. That's no problem. But we don't like paper magazines. We like the digital stuff. They did the trial when there was a postal strike last year. And apparently it's coming back.
It went well. A few things to sort out, a few minor niggles and legal things that got in the way. I was genuinely expecting this to happen, to be announced at the trade show at the beginning of the month.
Yes.
So it obviously took another 3 weeks.
We mentioned it as one of the things we'd have preferred rather than the rankings.
Yes. And I do believe this is what Autosport needs. It will remain to be seen whether or not it sells well. It's the concept is a long
we'll
time.
Subscribe.
We will absolutely, as we said,
we never would have to the actual magazine.
We never subscribed to Autosport paper magazine, and we haven't bought a copy of it for well over a year. I think we said that in a previous show, but we're going to do this, aren't we? As soon as it's
absolutely.
Available, we're going to be first in the line. It will be free to existing paper magazine subscribers. So if you get the paper version, you can get the online digital version completely free of charge. Bonus.
Yep. And if you subscribe to the website, you can get it for a little bit extra money, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
You have
it
to pay a premium charge on top of that. But still, I can't imagine that it's going to be extortionate amounts of money.
No. Well, hopefully not. We don't know. No price has been mentioned as yet. And this is a pre-announcement. It's not the official announcement. So that's
still turned up in the forum, but it was an official person.
Yes, so. It really is happening. And we're very much looking forward to it. And I would encourage anybody out there who has maybe avoided subscribing to the magazine, especially anybody who's overseas and would get it late, because obviously delays due to, you know, postal whatever overseas,
yeah,
means Formula One news would just be out of date by the time you received it. If that's been a problem in the past, you can now get it the minute the magazine is available at the same time as everybody else, which
really
sounds like a brilliant deal.
I really hope it works, because if that does, then F1 Racing, who's made by the same people, might go the same way.
Oh yes.
Woohoo!
Absolutely. So we will be championing it when it becomes available. There will be more information on the podcast, on the website, and we will plug it as much as we can, because we like to encourage these things.
And another thing that Autosport did well this week.
Two things?
Yeah, imagine that. The pictures on the website went a bit wrong, didn't they?
Oh, I forgot that. The server died.
And you tweeted the person responsible.
Was it Jeff?
I think it's Jeff. And he responded on Twitter at midnight and said he was working on it.
That was incredible. I think
that's service for you, isn't it?
Yeah, Scott came along and said, I'm looking for this Williams spy picture
that
only Autosport have, and it's not working. Where do I get a copy of that? And we went, well, it seems to be working. Oh, no. Whoops. No, all the pictures, absolutely every single photograph on Autosport had just vanished. So I just for my own amusement, really, tweeted Jeff and just said, look, your website's sort of gone a bit wonky.
Happens to the best of us.
Expecting, well, it happens to us more than most, I think, but I was expecting a reply in the morning to say, yeah, it went wrong and it got better. But no, he was up and working at midnight. He was actually working on some code for Autosport, and he got onto the case of the server people and got it fixed pronto. So that's the kind of service you're after.
Is there any TED news this week? I didn't see anything.
I have some secret special TED news.
Oh, go on.
It's not Formula One related in any way, shape or form other than it relates to Ted Kravitz.
Go on then.
It was noted on Twitter via, I think, Jake Humphrey, that Mr. Ted Kravitz has been moonlighting.
What?
He has been reporting the sports, quote unquote, news on BBC News 24.
On television?
Not Formula One news. Just general...
What, like football and stuff?
Stuff.
Oh, no.
Things that don't have engines and wheels.
Did he use our TED News jingle? Because that would be really,
no,
really fitting.
But I do like that, I think it was Gavin in the comments pointed out that TED News is less of a jingle and now more of a prophecy.
It's fact now.
There you go. Shall we hear it one more time? TED News. Brought to you by the BBC.
Whilst we're on the subject of jingles, I have made you another one. Because...
Made me a jingle?
Yeah. Because you know how last week we were talking... I think it was last week. We were talking about Claire Williams being on Twitter and how she's saying lots of good things, giving us nice insight into the team. And there was more. And I think you wanted to put it in the show.
Oh, yes. She's been very active this week.
Yeah. So I made you a jingle.
A Claire jingle?
Yeah.
Go on.
What's Claire tweeting now?
One more time.
What's Claire tweeting now? It's not the best jingle ever, but I think it works.
Okay, so this section is now entitled What's Claire tweeting now?
Yeah, just a couple of tweets that I thought were interesting. She said, on the way to London with Frank for a rare family outing going to Cirque du Soleil. Surprised we got him out of the office.
How cool is that?
That's very cool. I don't think I'd want to see Cirque du Soleil though. Lots of people bending about, funnily.
I do like the insight, though.
Yeah, it's
bending
good.
About funny.
That's what they do.
I had no idea what you're talking about.
And then there's one about F1. It says, and so the travelling begins, about to board Ryan Scare to Valencia. Can't wait to get there and see the new car.
Good stuff.
I'm assuming she means see it in action, because she must have seen it already.
Yes, you'd hope so.
Mm. And then there was another one, which I just want to throw in there because it's funny. It says, can someone please explain to me how to upload images to Twitter? Can't work it out and therefore probably don't deserve my job.
No way. I didn't see that tweet.
And then there was another one that said, thanks to everyone for explaining. So I think she must have figured it out by now.
Right. Well, presumably the answer is TwitPic, because you can't upload images to Twitter.
Yeah.
That's a major fail. I would say, to be honest with you, that I blame Twitter and not Claire for that.
Of course you do.
Because that's a user interface fail on their behalf and not hers at all. But I do like it. Yeah, that's a great tweet. One more jingle?
A jingle to sign us out with. What's Claire tweeting now? Feedback. We had a voicemail from AD already this show, but we also had one from Lukey, and he's not quite so happy.
Formula One, it's ironic that in a sport that prides itself on winning, nobody wins when they're changing the rules so much. We've got new points, we've got new qualifying, we've got new, everything is changing. I don't like change. If they're doing a good job of making me cry, they're doing a very good job, because I just want to cry at all these changes. Grr, new qualifying, why have they changed the tyres rules again? Grr, I'm all grrred out. Grr.
Sounded a bit like a pirate at the end there.
Is that our first Tremaine? He did a bit. Is that our first Tremaine of 2010?
I think it is.
Nice one. He's not happy with the rule and regulation changes.
Doesn't like changes.
Understood. There's a lot of fiddling and a lot of faffing going on at the moment. And I, like Lukey, I don't know why it's happening. It's hard to follow and it makes it very inaccessible to the public.
The problem I have is, if you're going to change the points, fine, do it. But don't change it and then change it again. And then talk about maybe changing it again. And then, oh, wait, it's not going to have the difference and Bernie doesn't like it. So let's talk about it some more.
Yes.
Just change it once and deal with it.
Too much faffing.
Anyway, moving on. I've had quite a few emails this week. The first one is from Myron, who said, hi, Christine. I wanted to confirm the Formula One Fantasy Races website you guys use. This year, we are trying to get the Formula One NYC members to play along to see how well everyone does. I just want to make sure we are all using the same website. Please let me know if this is the website you and Mr. C use when playing, fantasyraces.com. If there's a special league we need to join, please be sure to include the name. I look forward to the 2010 season and to playing against you. From all of us here in New York City, thanks, Myron. Now, he's from, I think it's a forum, Formula One NYC.com.
Okay, and coincidentally, we have finally figured out what we're doing with Fantasy Races this year.
Yes, so what
are we doing?
It is fantasyraces.com, and as ever, all you need to do is go along and make your team. It's free to join, and I think if you donate some money, you can have more than one team, but that is up to you. This year, there are two strategies you need to use, or you can pick between them. See, already it's complicated, and that's why we're not going to do it in the podcast anymore.
No, it's blog only because
I can't explain it.
It's just too damn complicated, but it's okay. I think it's genuinely slightly more simple than last year, but all in all, it just gave us a bit of a headache in 2009. So this year it's blog only. We will encourage lots and lots of comments and feedback on people's teams and selections, etc. And our league this year is called...
It is called Panda Racing 2010. So if you have a team already, you can search for Panda Racing and sign up. Or if you're working on setting it up, there are links on our site. We've written a post specifically with all the details and the instructions. There's no password this year. Usually the password is something like Frank.
But it's passwordless.
It's password free this year. But we will link to the post with all the information and hopefully get everyone joining in.
Absolutely. It's only, I think we confirmed it this week, exactly what the plans would be. And already there are over 60 teams signed up and we barely announced it yet. So it seems like a popular thing and we wouldn't want to not do it this year. But we've got to make our life a little bit easier by not doing it in
every
the
time I try to explain it, my brain explodes. So we decided against
it. It's definitely a thing you need to read and to take part in rather than to listen to.
I had a little bit of feedback from last week's show. Chris sent me a quick email that said, "No need to worry, you pronounced it as it should be, Saskatoon, and you got the province name correct too. How do I know? I have a friend who moved from the UK 3 years ago. Thanks for all the hard work you and Mr. C do. Roll on the new season. Regards, Chris."
How smug are you?
I just wanted to say thank you because of course you did. I get a lot of complaints about my pronunciation and that one made me feel good.
Fair enough. Rather you than me.
Also on last week's show, we had that request to make our show more fun, didn't we? And I'm using the correct English there instead of funner. I had a quick suggestion from Ben who said, "Regarding your reader's suggestion to make the show funner, followed by Mr. C's excellent idea to have us send in jokes that Christine would read, here is my tasteless contribution. What do you tell a side podcast co-host with two black eyes?"
I don't know.
"Nothing you haven't told him twice before."
Fun.
I don't really get it. Is that fun?
Yeah, yes.
Regards, Ben. He is in Idaho.
Thank you, Ben.
"P.S. Keep up the excellent work. And I too think the Castrol rankings are moronic, but yet they, like Bernie, have used a truly stupid idea to get people to talk about it. I guess it works. And I miss Inside Track video. It was perfect for showing non-fans on my iPhone. I even found a girl that was so impressed by it that she wanted to watch the next race with me. If I win the if I win the lottery, you guys are back in business for show." Which I think means for sure, but yes. I can't pull things like
that's,
that
off. That's brilliant, Ben. Okay, so I also got some rather poor jokes from Jeremy.
Did you?
And they're just as bad. Things like, "What's brown and sticky?"
What?
"A stick." Oh. Stuff like that. It's just clearly it was a bad idea. It wasn't a good idea, and I really don't think we should have any
no
more
jokes,
bad jokes.
Then.
No. But thank you, Ben, for highlighting how bad a suggestion that was. Inside track video.
We can only deal with what the teams give us, and so far there's not a lot.
And the team who gave us the most are no longer in Formula One, which is a bit of a problem. And as we said earlier, they sent themselves off with the best video in the world, but won't be coming back.
This next message is from Paul in Bolton. He said, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. C, I am unlucky enough to have been ill since before Christmas, so I've only just been able to catch up on your Christmas and New Year bonanza. My goodness, what a busy off-season you've had. An advent calendar, a song, and a side with Joe and mega mixes aplenty were all a great reminder of my first year as a side podcast listener, and I have more to hear before I'm up to date. Thank you for doing what you do. I know it's a bit late, but just so that I've got it off my chest, I must say that I'm surprised that one of my favourite moments of 2009 has thus far gone unmentioned. I am, of course, talking about Jensen's radio shout on his Monaco slowing down lap. Monaco, baby, yeah! It doesn't matter what else he does in his career, he can never ever justify shouting that again. Finally, no doubt you've read this from Nico Rosberg talking about Schumacher, but it has to be the quote of the year so far. You've got to love his optimism, and when it comes to car numbers, he's obviously like the Murphys. I have the assurance we will have equal equipment, all the attention will be on him, and I will have the time to concentrate on my work, and when I win in Bahrain, people will not be concerned about the number on my car, but the driver who is in it. A belated all the best for the new year, and keep it up. Bolton Paul."
Yeah, that's a great quote. And Monaco, I like your Monaco baby, yeah.
Monaco baby, yeah.
I prefer the first one.
Yeah, I won't do it again, don't worry. If Jensen shouldn't do it again, then neither should I. Next up, Mike had a quick word to say. He said, "Christine, fantastic podcast, I think. I say..."
Right. Oh dear.
Yeah, that's not a good start, is it? I say this because, well, I'm American. Yes, I arrogantly think America is only that bit of land between LA and New York. Let me back up a moment. We Americans are drawn to a British accent, much like Flavio is drawn to a mankini.
Ew.
It's unhealthy, but there it is. Anyway, your voice is so mesmerizingly sexy that I quite forget what it is you've just said. So I really enjoy your podcast, I think, Mike. Really?
I heart Mike.
Perhaps he should listen to me saying Monaco, baby, yeah, more often, because that's not sexy.
I can see a mashup picture appearing after this podcast.
Oh, dear.
Just saying.
Just a couple more. This one comes from Brawn to be Wild, which is quite an awesome
name. What a
name. Yeah, I don't think I saw that in all the headlines last year. That's quite clever. Hi, Christine and Mr. C. I was wondering if you know about who will be at the two test sessions in Jerez in February, or where I could confirm this, and also if either of them are going to be closed tests. It's quite difficult getting this information from the circuit in English. I live not far away in Seville, and I was thinking of going down there on one of the Fridays, as I'm one of those lucky people who have three-day weekends. I listen to your shows regularly, although this is the first time I've been in contact. If I go down and see anything interesting, I will, of course, update you. Cheers and keep up the good work. Brawn to be Wild.
Yes, you can, is the answer, Mr. Brawn, to be wild.
We don't know. I'm not sure we know which drivers are going to be at the Jerez tests. I think most of the teams are turning up, although we do know that Campos are skipping all pre-season testing, aren't they?
They are, and also USF1 is planning to stay over in the US. I do know from James Allen's website that he mentions that it's €5 per person to attend the Jerez tests. So that's a bit of a bargain
yeah.
in terms of following Formula One.
And that does mean that they're open as well.
Yep, he's expecting Force India to be there and a number of other teams. And therefore, he advocates going to the test because it's a ridiculously cheap way of seeing Formula One. But it does mention that you do need to be able to apply for tickets on the website.
You can see when the tests are on our new calendar. And I had my final message came from Matt, who likes the calendar. He said, "Hi, guys, I've been listening to the podcast since you started, but haven't been back to the website in about 8 months. One word, wow. It has improved significantly since I last visited and will be sure to check it out on a more regular basis from now on. Congratulations. Also, thanks for the calendar. I think it's a great idea. January is always the month that I try and find a decent F1 calendar for the race season on iCalShare. So podcast is a million times better than anything else out there. Anyway, gotta fly. Keep up the great work, Matt."
Brilliant. Love that calendar. That calendar now is my homepage. You know when you open your browser, it's the first page that appears?
Yeah.
Sidepodcast.com/calendar. That is what I wake up to every day because that tells me what on earth is going on. It's a giant calendar. It's right there. It does sync with all major calendars, Outlook, iCal on your Apple or your iPhone. Whatever your preferred choice of calendar application, it will sync with it and it will keep up to date as we add more information as we become aware of it. And you're intending to keep it up to date all year, aren't you?
I'm trying my best. If you see anything that's missing, let me know and I will add it as soon as possible.
Brilliant.
We're also adding non-F1 type things like Kimi and his rallying.
Good stuff. And like I said, it's my homepage. You can't beat it.
Housekeeping.
Last thing to plug then, just as we come to the end of the show.
Yep.
Another URL for you. That's easy for me to say. Another URL for your bookmarks.
Go on.
Sidepodcast.com/Twitter.
Oh, really? Mm. Are we Twitter now?
Well, it's a bit unreliable, that old Twitter.
Yeah.
Did you know you can't upload pictures to it? But no, that's an aside.
There's this thing called Twitter anyway.
Different conversation. Sidepodcast.com/Twitter. And what it is all the people that we are following on Twitter. So if you're new to the service or if you never know who to follow, who is related to Formula One and motorsport, etc.
Yes.
We've got a page that you can go to and you've got all of the drivers who are currently tweeting, all of the teams which are currently tweeting, F1 media, anyone who's on the inside and can give you official trusted information.
Like people that are updating the Autosport website and things like that.
Exactly like that, yeah. People you can tweet back. And various other people that we follow, all of the Side Podcast commenters, they're in a list. Essentially, anyone who's related to F1 or other motorsports that we like or follow or we're interested in, or basically, if you're just stuck on where to get started on Twitter and F1, is a good place to go. And we'll keep it up to date and we'll continue to bring more things Twitter-esque into the site. And we may even bring other stuff like Facebook and various things in. But at the moment, that's something new, something we've added. Sidepodcast.com/Twitter for all your tweeting needs.
I think Twitter's going to be quite useful this year, particularly over the next couple of weeks when we have testing and more launches to keep our eye on. We have got quite a lot of testing coverage coming up, haven't we?
It's going to be busy.
Yeah.
The teams are going to get down to work and we're going to have to keep track of everything that they do and we'll have daily threads on SidePodcast to keep you up to, not to be confused with the daily threads.
No, a thread for testing every day.
Each and every day.
We need to come up with some new names.
We've run out of words.
Yeah.
That's what's happened. there will be a thread on a day-by-day basis relating to just testing. Dedicated just to testing.
Yes.
So if you're interested in what's going on, just pop along. Ask us some questions. We'll be following all the action from behind our desks. We're not planning to get out of our chairs and go anywhere, God forbid. We'll be following from indoors, and we'll be keeping up to date with all the tests. And I guess we'll be back next week to
sum it up.
That's exactly what we'll be doing.